This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Let's show people how much you can do in a Dave Meltzer coaching session.
Let's Beautiful. Rock. Thank you so much, Dave, for having us. Appreciate you.
And thank you for the compliments as always. So, Dave, I have had this question for a while. I've been listening to Inner Engineering by Sadhguru. And one of the things he was talking about was the difference between intelligence and memory. What is your definition of intelligence?
Well, you guys, I'm doing a podcast with Sadhguru.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. On his new book. So we're going to kill it. So intelligence and memory. Okay. It's time. The difference is time, right? Intelligence is a display. Memory is a storage unit of time, right? You can't remember the intelligence. You remember to execute the intelligence. Remember, the word remember does not mean past. What does remember, recollect mean? Recollect, remember, come back together. So the difference is time. When you realize that you live in an instant between limitlessness and infinity, when you realize that time as it appears to you is just a man-made linear construct, but it's not, and Sadhguru will tell you it's not, that time itself, who taught me the moon and sun meditation to bend time, the difference between intelligence and memory to me is time. That in a linear sense, intelligence is executed, but remembering is the ability to access the information that is displayed as intelligence. See, genius, for example, a form of intelligence, a higher form of intelligence, is only what? A expression of God, meaning you have remembered, you have recollected, reconnected to the greatest source of light, love, and infinity. And now you are executing the connection to create intelligence or genius, an expression of God.
Dave, so I've thought about this a lot, but I want your take on it. Have you, and I personally have found a pretty strong correlation between those who enjoy and love mathematics and their ability to create wealth. Have you seen any correlation statistically from your understanding of and why is that, if so?
So first, 99% of all statistics are made up. That's the only statistic I know to be true. besides 100% of the things you do now get done. Why would math be a capability of financial success? Well, first of all, financial success is based off a construct of math, right? It's numbers and accounting and accumulation of a mathematical amount. That's wealth. If you're talking in financial terms, I assume when you say why are mathematical people, you know, able to amass more financial wealth, I assume that's what you meant, correct? Not in a spiritual wealth.
Yeah. From what I've seen, there seems to be a correlation between those who enjoy mathematics and financial wealth creation. Yeah.
It's because the skill set that is involved in financial success incorporates math. It just truly does. And discipline incorporates math. And perspective, math is a technology of the man-made construct here on this universe. It's a very helpful capability to be successful in a variety of things, and math itself allows you to be more productive and accessible and gracious. Math provides efficiencies of effectiveness and statistical success. All three of those things are going to amass a greater fortune for yourself in an economic realm. So, you know, it's like, I think the analogy I would use is, why is it people that are so fast, so good at athletics? Because if you're fast, it's a really nice component to be good at a lot of sports, right? I think math is like being fast in sports. Just because you're fast doesn't mean you're going to be good. Just because you know a lot about math doesn't mean you're going to be good with, but it's definitely a skill set that if utilized correctly will set you apart from the rest. You know, if Tyreek Hill didn't know how to catch, all he would be is fast, like Nehemiah was, the Olympic hurdler that played in the NFL for the Rams. He was just fast, but it certainly helped him get to the NFL. It certainly is an attribute. So without a doubt, math will help you become rich.
Fire.
Dave, what is your, so you've been leading for a long time. You've led a lot of people. What is your leadership philosophy and what are the, I guess, benefits and detriments of your style, do you think?
Yeah. So it's changed over the years. So, you know, I am now, I lead as an intelligent follower. I lead with radical humility. I lead understanding the nuance between coach and mentor, where I think I was at a young age, much more a coach. A coach is someone that just gets the best out of you, that doesn't really know what they're doing, but they just have the great capability of bringing the best out of you. They know enough to be dangerous, but they're able to get the best out of you. And it's great as a leader to be a good coach. But a mentor is someone that gives the best of them. And to do that, you need to be humble, an intelligent follower, kind, less competitive. You know, early on, it was a very, you know, Napoleonic type of leadership where I had very little doubt that I knew everything. I was a great motivator. Now I'm a great inspirer. I could get you up, get you back up, get you started, get you back started. I could get the best out of you, but I would burn you out. And that was the negative of it. The negative of my new style of leadership is patience. Both as a leader, I have to be much more patient, but the people who I collaborate with have to be much more patient because I do have the humility. I do have the ability to be an intelligent follower, to be more interested than interesting. I know that it takes about 90% of our effort to get to a place where we can actually see a result. And to lead within the context of 90% of the time, you see no results as an intelligent follower, not as a coach, but as a mentor, is a challenge. And to effectuate that, you have to consistently, persistently, not only teach values, but daily practices that will allow people to stay inspired while they're allowing the 90% of the effort to manifest something that can actualize and materialize.
Do you, so you're very, very self-aware of your strengths and your weaknesses and your bottlenecks. Do you find that leaders, some leaders lack self-awareness? Like how important is self-awareness as a leadership trait?
I think it's crucial, you know, but it doesn't mean it's a necessity. You know, self-awareness is a muscle that continually grows. It's a vibration, right? I believe our awareness stems from a vibration to plateau and grow. We can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than us. And so I'm continually, consistently trying to increase my vibration or frequency. You know, I had a quote today, and I hope they picked it out, about you cannot love what you do. You can only learn to love what you do. Some things are easier to learn than others.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting. And everything we, you know, actually, I'm going to go to this other one. So I wanted to ask you, and this goes with what Kevin just asked, or at least your answer to it. How often do you question yourself? Because I know that as a leader, you have to have some degree of certainty to be able to influence and create certainty and action and consistency. But you also have to be uncertain enough to stay humble. I guess, what is your perspective on that? Because I, like you, look back to, you know, episodes that we did very early on, and I was much more certain of what I knew, right? And now I'm much more of a student in just in general, which is fascinating because I know 10 times more now than I did back then. For you, what's your frame around how often you question yourself and how do you create certainty in your environment for those you lead and those you're around?
That's where taking inventory of your values is essential because that inventory of your values, the daily practice of taking inventory of your values allows you to make game time decisions. And those game time decisions are certain decisions in only one respect. Decisions I make all day long, efficiently, effectively, with statistical success, are decisions that are based upon the inventory of my values for that day. Therefore, I don't have to worry about which is wishing for what I don't want, as Sharon Lecter taught me, worrying is wishing for what you don't want. I don't worry about anything other than the values as they were set forth today, making a decision based on those values and understanding that if tomorrow I find out that that decision was not the best decision, pain will appear in my life to indicate that I have a greater lesson to learn so I can go to a better place, a better situation. But enjoying that process will just expedite the results in which I'm looking for, combined with faith, will put me to a better place than I'm looking for if I have that currency in place as well. So for me, compared to the past, where I carried an arrogance that I knew what I knew and I didn't know what I didn't know, I live in radical humility that all I can do is make decisions today based on the values that I have, the weighted value system, personal, experiential, giving and receiving, that I dictate for productivity, accessibility, and gratitude of my day, being efficient, effective, and statistically successful, utilizing those inventory of values of who I am. So therefore, I can align my decision-making process with who I am today, knowing what I know today, also knowing that I don't know the majority of the things that I don't know in that their existence, but it allows me to truly enjoy the journey without creating void shortages and obstacles of worrying about what's missing, what I don't want, what I may have made a mistake at. There are no uncertainties in my decisions because I just best align them with my values. Then I'm certain they're at least aligned with my values for the day. And that's what I set forth for in the day. And tomorrow it may change and I may learn something. Woohoo! I'm happy with it.
Do you find it difficult, whether it's parenting or guiding your team, to go through the process of allowing others to make their own decisions that maybe you, at a higher sense of awareness, know are a poor decision, but at one point you would have made that decision too? I guess what's your frame around allowing others to sort of make their own mistakes, for lack of better phrasing, when in reality we're all, there is no right decision. It's always, how do we find better and better and better decisions? So how do you deal with other people making what you consider poor decisions based on your awareness of their values and where they want to go?
Knowing that I don't know what I don't know, especially as a parent, if you think you know that going to college or graduate school or is best for your child, you're high. I hate to tell you, as a parent, I mean, the things that I was taught that my parents, what I do know is I want four things for my children. I want them to be healthy. I know that. So I'm going to give them advice to hopefully set forth habits that make them healthy or some sort of awareness to their health. Two, I want them to be happy. And so I want to make sure that that's what I'm trying to do. Three, I want them to love me. And so I'm going to have to be love for others to love me. I'm going to have to love myself. And four, I want them to appreciate me. Not in the respect that most people think. I want them to know that I have their back, that I'm here to add value to their life, to give them good and bad advice, and to give them good and bad examples from the actions that I take, and give them the tools to distinguish between the two according to their own values. And so I think we sit there as parents and bosses and say, you know, oh, they're making a huge mistake. They shouldn't be doing this. I really don't know. What I pray for is that they learn the lessons fast, that they spend minutes and moments in ego-based consciousness. They spend minutes and moments creating interference between them and what they already are, complete health, complete happiness, and complete wealth. And that they learn faster than I have what interferes with their health, their happiness, and their wealth, so that they can live an abundant life and empower others to live an abundant life. And most importantly, be healthy, happy, love me, and appreciate me. And that, I think, holds true with the way I feel about the people I work with. Other people call them employees. I call them my other family, my collaborators in life. But for me, I want them to be healthy, happy, appreciate me and love me, and know that I'm teaching them how to rid themselves for the interference between the health and the happiness and the wealth that they already are.
Powerful.
Dave, I think you put a post on Instagram about like your daily schedule. What gives you the most significance throughout your day?
Wow. Significance in the respect of being purposeful, passionate, and profitable. Is that significance or?
What makes you feel like you had the biggest impact? Is it a one-on-one conversation? Is it looking, you know, at your second family?
I would have to say what gives me the most significance is at the 9 o'clock wind down, which is really the beginning of my day. And realizing how I'm plateauing and growing, how productive, accessible, and gracious I was during the day, the lessons that I've learned. You know, when you start playing with the context of time and bending time through, you know, really building your refocus muscle, your mental mind, your thought process to beat the speed of light, and that even in your own awareness, to look back, you know, or for me, it's looking forward because it's the beginning of my day, but to see the productivity, accessibility, and gratitude of statistical success and efficiencies and effectiveness and, you know, the unbelievable amount of passion, profit, and purpose that I can empower others with in one day. Mm-hmm. That gives me significance. And I'm blessed because, you know, I'm past the 25%. You know, I've done the work, the enjoyment of the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. I am reaping the materialization. I am aware I don't have to sit in faith all the time because I have results. And the results are in the 200 turning into 400%, into 800%, or into 1600%. You know, I'm there now. And I just want to make sure I'm utilizing it in the best way to continue to grow, expand, and accelerate and help others grow, accelerate, and expand as well. You two guys are living proof of my significance.
Do you ever, is there a part of you ever that attaches your ego to helping somebody else? Like, do you know what I mean?
Every day.
Is that negative or is that positive?
It's negative and it's every day. It's every day. I just want to spend minutes and moments. Remember, that when you take that, you have a need to be separate. You feel inferior, superior, right? If I take great joy in your success and I feel accountable or whatever, there's an ego. When I say to you, you're, you know, looking at you two is the significance. There's ego involved there, right? Because we're one. Of course that I'm going to feel good when you feel bad and feel good, you know, bad and you feel bad. It doesn't matter. So anything that separates us is ego. And so I just spend minutes and moments there. And I do it every day in the context of 1,000 different things. But what I used to do is spend weeks, months, and years there in creating interference, void, shortages, and obstacles and ending up in the same or worse spot with the same effort that I put in every day today.
Dave, if you had to sum up one core belief, and I don't know if we have to go or not yet, but if your acorn that's grown into this mighty oak, like one core belief that drives you most, what would it be?
Kindness. It encompasses so much. Take it home tonight. Think about kindness. Everyone that's listening to this, think about when you talk about incorporating, what are the seeds within the seeds of kindness? What is kindness? What do you need to have to be kind? You got to have gratitude, forgiveness, and accountability. You have to have happiness. There's so many things incorporated into humility. You know, all the practices to me are incorporated in the seed of kindness. The unconditionality, the non-attacks, judgments, or conditions. Kindness to me, it's so simple. If I could have a kind mind, a kind heart, and a kind soul the majority of the time, imagine gratitude, forgiveness, accountability are all incorporated. You cannot have kindness and not be gracious. You cannot be kind and not be forgiving. You cannot be kind and not be accountable. The minute you go to blame, shame, and justification, the minute you have judgments, conditions, and attacking thoughts, the minute you are not grateful for what you have, you're not kind.
What used to be your core belief that drove you? when you were in more of an ego-based consciousness, if you don't mind me asking?
The best.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The best. It was all about not even being my best. It was being the best, right? I could outwork you. I wasn't running my own race. I was stealing my joy by comparing myself at all times to someone or something. My bank account, my business, my employees, my car, my house. I wanted to be the best. In fact, when I was a young man, one of the wisdom things that I ignored from my father, you know, and it is a total, I think, illustration of who I was. I told my dad on my 18th birthday, we were in a huge fight, that I wanted to be the best at everything I did. And my dad said, that's impossible. And I was so mad at him. You don't think I can be the best at everything? No, I don't. And I felt as if he was hurting me, you know, that he didn't respect me. That, I mean, the ego is so out of control at 18 years old. I was so hurt. I laugh at it now. And my dad, as you know, has passed, but I laugh at how lost I was, because I can only be the best that I can be at everything. And I wish my dad was enlightened enough and aware enough to have distinguished that instead of, you know, not being capable of articulating what he truly meant, which was, Dave, you can't be the best at everything, but you certainly can be the best that you can be at everything. And that's what you should strive to do. And that's what I teach my children.
Wow. Such a small distinction, but it makes a world of difference. It's unreal.
Yeah, that's what the ego do. It's a subtlety of success.
Wow. Beautiful.
Dave, last question, boys.
You were talking about the difference between being a coach and a mentor. How is that an internal thing where I have to get to the point where I can give all of myself to somebody, or is that a knowledge gap? How do you know when you're going from a coach into somebody's mentor or have the ability to?
Oh, I think everyone has the ability, determinative upon what their skills and capabilities and knowledge are. And so I think it's just making a conscious decision of saying, you know, this is a situation where I want to push this. I want to get the best out of them. It has nothing to do with what I know, right? I just see that I can bring the best out of this person. And it could be, you know, in the respect that you never know what a couple words of kindness means. You know, you might hit somebody on the right day and, you know, let them cut in front of you in line at the grocery store. And they look back at you and say, you know what? You know, I just moved here and I was about to move away because I haven't seen anyone with kindness. And I told myself if I didn't have a sign today that I was going to leave, and you let them in front of you, right? What are you, right? So you have to acknowledge, what am I trying to do? And they can combine, right? At times you can bring the best out and give your best at the same time. But I think, you know, it's a much better distinction than, you know, what people used to ask me, the difference between a coach and a mentor. I would tell them $500 an hour. That doesn't work.
That's pretty funny. Good stuff. Dave, I know we're out of time. Thank you so much for this. This has been incredible. I know we both have a full page of notes.
And you're a great, great, great mentor to us. And we appreciate you and love you, Dave.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to empower others to be happy.